Can I first of all ask if are there any Latvians in the audience tonight? No people from Latvia. Okay. I think I'm fairly confident then, but may continue without fear of contradiction. Because although Peter the Pope is associated with sensational events in London, and I'll spring off from those for anybody that doesn't know the story of Hans Hutchinson history. Most of what I'm going to talk about tonight happened in Latvia, which for those who aren't very good about geography, Latvia was a former part of the Russian Empire, which sits on the Baltic, on the other side of the Baltic Sea from Sweden, and now is an independent country once more since the collapse of the Soviet Union. Okay, we wouldn't know anything at all about Latvian anarchists, and certainly not the presence of Latvian anarchists in England and Scotland, had it not been for an expropriation that went wrong on the 16th of December 1910, when police were called to investigate suspicious sounds in a building adjacent to a jeweller's just around the corner from Liverpool Street Station, and blundered into a group of Latvian anarchist expropriators. Unfortunately, these particular burglars were tooled up, opened fire, and hit five of the policemen, three of whom died. One of the people doing the shooting was accidentally wounded by his own comrade because of the close confines of the encounter, and taken back, wounded but still alive, to a flat in Stepney, where he was eventually found by the police, where he later died. And in his pocket was the membership card of the Latvian anarchist communist group Liesma. Liesma is Latvian for the flame. So they knew, first of all, that it was Latvian, secondly, that it was anarchist, and thirdly, that the room that he was found dead in belonged to a man who went by the name of Peter Piatkov, who was known to his comrades as Peter the Painter, or in Latvian, Petrus Krasafars. Now, who was Peter the Painter? Well, you may well ask, and I'm going to tell you. There are various myths about Peter the Painter. He was a police agent provocateur. He was Stalin. He was the brother of a Metropolitan Police interpreter. He was later an agent of Lenin's Cheka. All of these are absolute nonsense. If you want to go into why those myths arose, I'd be happy to sort of come back to it in a question of time. But the thing that puzzled me about all of the books, and there's about sort of four or five, six books over the years, two films, various series, the thing that puzzled me about everything to do with this whole business surrounding the Hansage murders was some of the books are based on the police case notes in the case. Everybody agreed they were Latvian, but nobody had thought to go to Latvia to look for an answer to who these people were. The Latvian police, during the subsequent investigation, supplied copious information to the City of London police, actually including the real identity of Peter the Painter. And so, in a way, it's a sort of laziness of researchers that the real identity of Peter the Painter wasn't published earlier, because the City of London police had that information in their files in 1912, certainly by 1912, possibly by 1911. As I say, there was this spectacular shooting. They wanted to get somebody. They issued a wanted poster with a reward of £500, bearing the photographs of this man, Peter Piatkov, Peter the Painter. And amongst the reports from not only the Russian police, but just about every police force in the world, was information that the identity of Peter Pyatkov, alias Peter the Painter, we believe may be identical to the peasants from Kolyn, Janusz Żabka, or Żabkas. Żabka in Latvian means a forked tree. Most Latvian surnames are taken from nature, animals, trees, because Latvia was probably the last pagan country in Europe. Certainly remained pagan up to about the 15th century before it subdued properly to Christianity. So Latvian surnames tended to come from nature. Żabka meant forked tree, because he was a man. The ending of the word becomes Żabkas. So I refer to him as Janusz Żabkas. Anyway, I went to Latvia in 1988 when Latvia was still in the Republic of the Soviet Union. I didn't speak Russian, I didn't speak Latvian. I only had a tourist visa. But through sheer bloody cheek, I managed to make enough connections on that trip to go back in 1989 with a business visa and do proper research. And at first I looked at all the clues and similarities and concluded that Peter the Painter had to be the Latvian people's artist, Jelis Ellis, who was an expropriator. He wasn't an anarchist, but the clues seemed to disregard. Unfortunately, on my second trip in 1989, on the last day of my last visit to the archive, in the last file I looked at, I found some photographs. And the first photographs I found were pictures that looked remarkably like David Beckham, complete the haircut. And these photographs are taken of a prisoner in Minsk prison in Belarus. You've been arrested in Bobrusk for spreading seditious propaganda in the form of proclamations. And it turned out it was also wanted in Talsi in Latvia for doing the same thing. And this man's name wasn't Jelis Ellis, it was Janusz Żabkas, the same name that appeared in the London police files. And next to this photograph of the mugshots of Janusz Żabkas was an original, of which this is a copy, of one of the pictures that appeared on the London Wanted poster for Peter the Painter. And on the back, it was written Żabkas in America as Talbergs. Talbergs was the maiden name of Janusz Żabkas' mother. So we've got a steady sort of accumulation of material showing that Peter the Painter is Janusz Żabkas. Photographic evidence, police evidence. After the fall of the Soviet Union, Latvia became an independent country again. It had been independent between 1918 and 1940, when first of all the Russians invaded and occupied it, and then a year later the Nazis invaded and occupied it. And in 1945 the Russians came back and occupied it again, and it stayed in the Soviet Union until after the Soviet Union collapsed. In the meantime, I'd shelved this project for various reasons, but came back to it in the year 2000. And between 2003 and 2008, the present day, I've been able to do a proper trawl of the Latvian National Archives and go through all, or certainly a large part, of the Tsarist police files, of the Tsarist police department, the secret police, the Okhranka, which are all in old-fashioned Russian, not modern Russian, some Latvian, but mostly in Russian. And with the help of my partner, who is Latvian, decipher all this stuff. And there really is a wealth of information there about Latvian anarchism and the Latvian anarchist movement, which I'll come on to presently. There was also a file on the Anishinaabemowin in connection with these two cases of spreading seditious propaganda in 1903 and 1904. So then I accumulated a lot more material and found the police reports that resulted from a request from London in 1911 for information about Peter Piatkov, or Peter the Painter, whom the Kronka managed to identify as Janis Jarklis. Okay, so who is Janis Jarklis? Was he an anarchist? What was he doing in London? What was he doing in Latvia became before he came here? And I really want to forget about the Hanzish murders and the Swedish industry which resulted from it. And go back, as they say, at the beginning of the Beatles anthology, to where the story really began. And it began with a massacre in Riga in January 1905. And in this case, it wasn't anarchists that perpetrated the massacre. The terrorists in this case were the Russian government. The start of what became the 1905 revolution in Russia. In Petrograd, there was a massacre of a peaceful demonstration of strikers known as Bloody Sunday. When the news of the Bloody Sunday massacre reached Riga, which is the capital of Latvia, the strike movement in Riga, which was organised under the umbrella of the Riga Federative Committee, which was a coalition of the Latvian Social Democratic Workers' Party and the Jewish Bund, which organised the Jewish workers in Latvia, organised a mass demonstration through Riga of tens of thousands of workers. When this demonstration reached the railway bridge on the banks of the Danube, which runs through the middle of Riga, like the Thames does in London, it was confronted with a large body of Cossacks and Dragoons and armed soldiers of the Russian Empire, who ordered the demonstration to disperse. Nobody moved, and just in that incident, nobody knows who, tossed an innocent snowball from the railway bridge at the soldiers. And as the snowball landed amongst the soldiers, they opened fire. 73 people were shot dead. 200 people were wounded, and an uncounted number of people died by drowning as they desperately tried to escape over the thin ice of the Danube River. This traumatic event in Riga convinced the workers' movement that it needed to arm in its own defence. This isn't a few egocentric anarchist terrorists, this is the workers' movement. Every factory in Riga set up its own fighting organisation. People began making bombs. People began expropriating arms shops, stopping policemen on the street, usually by putting bullets in them, and disarming soldiers on the street. This is the start of the 1905 revolution in Latvia, which was the most violent armed insurrection of the 1905 revolution anywhere in the Russian Empire. In Russia proper, there was a few barricades in Moscow. In Georgia and the Caucasus, there was armed insurrection. But in Latvia, a country of only around 2 million people, there was a tremendous armed insurrection that dwarfed anything that happened in the Russian Revolution of 1905. The Riga Federative Committee set up its own revolutionary militia, and the Latvian Social Democratic Workers' Party organised its own fighting organisation, which in Riga had around 200 members. In Liepāja on the coast, the second city, another 200 members, and there was a few hundred scattered around the country. The man chosen to lead both the fighting organisation of the Latvian Social Democratic Workers Party and the Riga Federative Committee was Janis Jarklis. He was effectively the military leader of the Latvian Revolution of 1905. He was then a social democrat, which in those days was pre-Leninist Marxism. What Leninism was probably called Mensheviism, because it was the social democracy imported from Germany with the ideas of Kautsky and Bernstein. Jarvis was a tremendously inventive person. He was only at this point 21, 22 years old, but now he was in charge of all fighting operations against the military formations of the Tsar and the police, and he made himself very effective. In the year 1905, a quarter of the Riga police force was shot on the street and usually disarmed, and those arms passed into the hands of the workers' movement. As I say, this wasn't a bunch of let's have a go, for propaganda might do. This wasn't propaganda. This was fighting for survival. This was an insurrection. The workers were arming, and the workers were striking back. Latvia had been in various times in its history possession of Sweden, Denmark, Germany, and now it's in the Russian Empire. As a hangover from the German occupation, most of the land in the countryside was still owned by German barons, who treated the Latvians not only as second-class citizens and serfs, although serfs had been abolished, they treated them actually as an inferior species. The Latvian language was not taken seriously as a language. It was seen as a peasant vernacular, a dialect. But at the end of the 19th century, rapid industrialization of the Baltics and what the Latvians termed the national awakening, blossoming of the Latvian language and Latvian literature and the new ideas of socialism that were imported from Germany, became mixed up with Latvian nationalism. So you had an explosive mixture of class struggle and national liberation struggle. And in 1905, it was like putting sodium chlorate and sugar together and dropping acid on it. It blew up. And by the way, this is a recipe that I don't advise you try it out. So throughout the first period of 1905, they did everything to arm. They brought arms in from abroad. They disarmed policemen. They raided gun shops. They did everything to get armed. In the spring of 1905, Jarvis was very busy touring Latvia, organising the fighting groups in all the country districts. And on May Day, 1905, the workers celebrated with massive demonstrations, but they didn't just leave it with massive demonstrations. In two areas of Riga, Vermans Park, which is a big park that's still there in the centre of Riga, and the workers' district in Kristiankals, they attacked police with bombs. Things are really getting geared up. Strikes, general strikes, were almost a daily occurrence. In the countryside, agitators, including Janis Jarvis, who was noted as one of the finest speakers, would go from church to church on Sunday, not to sing the hymns, to take the church over. The peasants would arrive at the church, throw the vicar out, stand up in the pulpit with a red flag, sing revolutionary anthems, give a big speech, and often at gunpoint force the vicar to carry the red flag to the local baron and get involved. The church was hated in Latvia because it was seen as in with the establishment, just like in Spain, just the Catholic Church was in the establishment. In Latvia, it's the Lutheran Church, the Protestants, who were hand in glove with the establishment. At one of these church demonstrations, a local baron, incensed by these revolutionary speeches in the church, pulled out a pistol and opened fire on the congregation. And when a socialist in the audience took the gun off him to disarm him, to shoot him, stop him shooting any more peasants, the guy that disarmed the baron was prosecuted and received 4 years and died in prison. That shows you the sort of feudal system existed in, the baron, just walked away. Anyway, in September 1905, something really spectacular happened, that England ended up in the collected works of Lenin, in an article entitled "Hail the Revolution, the Heroes of the Riga Revolution and Detachment." You can look it up in the collected works of Lenin. And it's as an example to his comrades in the Russian party of what it meant to be a revolutionary, and how they should stop sitting on their hands and get out there and burn a few police stations and get busy. Because one dark night in September 1905, a group of 52 fighters, organised by Janis Jaklus, took up positions around Riga Central Prison, which was then a new prison that had just been built. It was a model prison, I think. It was probably the most modern prison anywhere in the Russian Empire. Took up positions around the prison and decided that the time was right to free two leaders of the Riga Federation Committee who were due to be shot. Their execution was imminent. Janis Jaklus and a small group of these 52 fighters went over the wall of Riga Central Prison and into the solitary confinement block of Riga Central Prison, and at gunpoint unlocked cells and took these two comrades out of the cells to freedom. It was an event that reverberated around the world. It was in the international press, and as I say, Lenin had an orgasm and wrote this big essay in his collection, which is another one of his collected works. Between October and December 1905, the workers of Riga took over the city for 3 months. A general strike proclaimed, all trains had stopped, water and utilities were in the hands of workers, none of the factories produced anything, workers ran Riga. The authorities were still there, the army was still there, police were still there, but the workers had the power. In the countryside, during November, the peasants decided, these townies have got it all wrong. We don't just want a general strike and a dual power situation. We want to go and burn the castle and the fortified manor of the landlord. We want to seize his land. We want to steal all the guns off him we can. And we want to have an armed insurrection, and that's what they did. In the countryside, all through Latvia, particularly in the western part of the country, Courland, all the castles and all the fortified manor houses erupted in flames. Barons were shot. Their arms caches and arsenals were expropriated, and the peasants took over the land and elected revolutionary parish councils. The Latvian countryside was organised into administrative districts called pagasts, or parishes. And these revolutionary pagast councils formed themselves effectively into Soviets, or they didn't call them that, and took over the countryside. Understandably, the Tsar wasn't very pleased with all this going on, general strikes and armed insurrections, and policemen being killed, and worse than that, barons being killed. And of course, the German nobility were actually the biggest supporters of the Tsar, and looked upon the Tsar as the more reliable elements in the nobility, much more reliable than the Russian boyars, who saw as a threat. You might one day want a bourgeois democracy that wouldn't have any need for the Tsar. So he sent in a primitive expedition, what we call the death squads, into Latvia. And in a period of 10 months, they killed, on a conservative estimate, 2,556 people. Anybody that was suspected as being a revolutionary and involved in strikes or revolutionary propaganda was hung from telegraph poles, shot by the side of the road, burnt in their own homes. People who were just in the wrong place at the wrong time were just zapped at the side of the road. Families were burnt in their homes. Whole villages were razed to the ground, bombarded with cannon. That was the reply from the Tsar to the demands of his subjects for more freedom. Cannon. execution, murder. This is the real terrorism, state terrorism, unleashed by the czarist autocracy, and the violence raised by the revolutionaries pale in significance in comparison. Jacques was involved also in the Latvian countryside during the insurrection. In one incident in Lielvārdenes Kriveri, some of these barons and the local governors and administrators were taken hostage. All of these people had blood on their hands. They all executed peasants that they believed were involved in agitation and propaganda. They desperately wrote letters asking for clemency to the Riga Federative Committee, who sent envoys to the countryside to try and do a deal to get these poor German barons released before the outraged peasantry took justice into their own hands. Unfortunately for the barons, Janis Jaukas was on the scene, and Janis Jaukas thought, no, I mean this. I grew up in the countryside. I saw what these people did. I've had to live in these communities. I'm not going to let these people free, so that when they come to point the finger at us, these barons can come and say, he was one, and he was one, and we could all be shot. And you had a shot just lined them all up and shot them, executed them. Similarly, he pulled the trigger with his own hand. And these people all richly deserve what they got. And I have no qualms about coming down on that. That is class justice. This is not propaganda by the D and making a symbolic attack on the personalities of power. This is class justice. This is revolutionary violence and where it should be used. To say to the individuals directly responsible for oppressing the peasantry and the workers, now it's your turn. Goodbye. You are the weakest. So, anyway, the repression in the end won out, and most of the revolutionaries if they weren't killed or imprisoned or sent to Siberia, and 5,000 people had to leave Latvia and go to Europe and America, which is why we got the Latvians in England. And another 5,000 went to Siberia for hard labour and exile. One of the last actions Jacques did in Riga before he made a hasty exit was to be involved in an attack by 12 fighters on the headquarters of the Riga Police Department, where the Hasta Kranka, the secret police, were based, and where on a daily basis revolutionary suspects were horribly tortured, in some cases tortured to death, before they were transferred to Riga Central Prison and executed. And in fact, if you go to Riga now, in the Matisse Cemetery at the side of the prison, you will see the graves of many, many people who were just killed, some without trial, in the prison and buried just over the wall in the cemetery. Their graves are still there. 12 people descended upon the headquarters of the police department in Riga, which is still a police station today. Four of them went inside and, pretending to go to the detective department on business, produced Mausers, opened fire on the guards, and started again freeing the cells. Janis Jaukas didn't like to leave people in the hands of these people. When people got lifted, he went after them and got them back. And 3 or 5 prisoners. One of the people he freed was a man called Fritz Vallas. And Fritz Vallas is relevant to this story because he was one of the 2 individuals who died in the siege of Sydney Street. And I'll show you his photo sometime. And I must admit to a personal link in this case. After moving into my present house,
I suddenly realized that Fritz Karls and his comrade Joseph, William Sokolov, were buried at the end of my garden. Literally buried at the end of my garden, because at the bottom of my garden is the railway line from Ilford to Liverpool Street Station. And on the other side of the railway line is the Corporation of London Cemetery, where Fritz Karls and William Sokolov were buried. Not in a grave, but in on consecrated ground. It's actually a rose garden today. And I've got the plot number, I know where they're buried. One day I might just upset everybody by erecting a gravestone there. But they're buried at the bottom of my garden, literally. So having three scars and these other guys, Yana Sharpless beat a hasty retreat, and the fighters responsible went to St. Petersburg in Russia. And because things were too hot on that, they got mixed up with the fighting organisation of the Russian Social Democratic Labour Party and started robbing banks for Lenin. And in February 1906, 25 young Latvians marched into the state bank in Helsinki and emptied the safes and the cash box. 180,000 rubles, which then was £18,000, an absolute fortune. 10,000 rubles went to Lenin, straight in his trousers for Bolshevik activities, which is how the Bolsheviks got there, because they could then have the train fares and the ship's tickets to get Bolshevik delegates to international conferences, rather poor Mensheviks had to sit at home. And without the money to publish papers or get to these conferences, and then he had plenty of money from the bank robberies to get his delegates like Stalin to London in 1907 and become the Bolsheviks, the majority. In fact, were a minority within their own party, but that's where the name comes from. And the money, or at least this 10,000 rubles of it, came from the Yana Sharpless. The rest of the money was spent wisely in Europe, in Belgium, Holland, and Germany, buying Mausers and Brownings in industrial quantities, straight from the factory, which were then shipped to London and Glasgow, broken up into smaller consignments, put on boats in Newcastle and Glasgow and London, and shipped back to the Baltic for the armed resistance. The armed truckers returned to Latvia in April 1906, but this time, by this time, he'd become an anarchist. He got fed up with the Social Democratic Party. He got fed up with all this talk about stopping the armed struggle and going in the Duma and trying to get a constituent assembly and voting for reform. We've just had an armed insurrection. The workers have just taken over Riga for 3 months. We want to go on, don't stop now. We want a general strike. We want an armed insurrection. We want to just push a bit further until the workers and peasants take over. We don't want to stop now and go and sit in the bloody Russian Duma and talk about whether the Tsar will give us a free press and an amnesty for political prisoners. We want to bring him down off his chair. And this crisis in the Social Democratic Party gave birth to the Latvian anarchist movement. Before the spring of 1906, there were anarchists in Latvia, very few and unorganised. Žižkas, with his big reputation as an organiser of the fighting organisation, and his exemplary actions, which kept caught headlines around the world, left and set up a group called PAS, Vards and Darbs, the same in word and deed. This is the harmonisation of putting your actions where your mouth is, harmonising what you do with what you say. It's not propaganda by doing, it's putting your politics in harmony with the principles. And Pats, Vards and Darbs produced a hemorrhage of people leaving the Social Democrats. So alarmed was the party that they started publishing a string of articles in the party press attacking the anarchists. And by October 1906, they were so alarmed even more because the anarchists had started publishing. And they produced a journal called Viesma, The Flame, the same name as the group in London, that carried out the hostage murders.
The ESMA.
And it was in fact the same group of individuals. And this is the first of a series of journals that Janusz Janczak has edited and translated material for, and in some cases wrote for. So there are articles signed not Peter the Painter or Peter Piatkov, or even Janusz Janczak, but signed with the initial M. And the initial M stood for his alias Merniex, which means the land surveyor, Merniex. Merniex was a character in a book that was part of the Latvian National Awakening called Mernieku Laiku, the time of the land surveyor, when the land in Latvia was being redistributed, and the land surveyor was the person who physically measured the land. So there was some link with land reform. everybody in the revolutionary movement used these revolutionary aliases and referred to each other under their aliases rather than their own name. And in the case of Janusz Janczak, this was a very wise move, because although in 1911 the Latvian police managed to make a link between Peter the Painter and Janusz Janczak, they never discovered that Peter the Painter and Janusz Janczak were also Comrade Merniex, their public enemy number one, the organiser of the Latvian armed resistance, the military leader in the insurrection, executed poor barons and governors who only a few weeks before had been massacring peasants. So he was wanted in connection with the deaths of three policemen, but I always think the hostage murders in the city of Sydney Street were only a footnote to the revolutionary career of Janusz Janczak, because he killed personally many more policemen and soldiers and barons in Latvia. Not through poor Dixon to Doc Green, who unfortunately for them wandered in at the wrong place at the wrong time. Janusz Janczak arguably wasn't involved in the Hamstead murders. There's no evidence to put him at Hamstead during the shootings. And he certainly wasn't in Sydney Street during the siege. But he certainly was guilty of shooting policemen in industrial quantities. A quarter of the Riga police force was shot, mostly on the orders of Janusz Janczak. And he was actually disciplined by the party at one occasion for going out when things got quiet, after he finished shooting policemen and freeing comrades from prison, and physically attacking and shooting hordes of black hundreds who were trying to carry out anti-Jewish pogroms. After he finished with all that, he got bored, went out in the street and started looking for random Russian army officers that he could shoot. And he was actually disciplined by his party for actually going out to find a target of convenience. Anyway, how are you over time? Okay. All of this going on in Latvia produced quite a large Latvian anarchist movement, the proportions of which I only realised when I delved into the Latvian police archives. Actually the Russian police archives, because it's the biggest depository of secret police files of the Tsarist Ukrainka anywhere in the world outside Moscow. There's another archive in the Hoover Institute in America. But the Latvian National Archives in Riga has a huge and largely uncatalogued collection of it, old Tsarist police files. And when you go through them, it's an education. Hundreds of names of individuals that were followed on a daily basis. Day by day, almost hour by hour, reports of secret agents, stool pigeons and infiltrators, charting the rise of and movement of the anarchist movement. A lot of material on Janczak, because he was seen as the main ideological figure in the Latin anarchist movement, and certainly the most important organiser. Because of the repression inside that movement, the Latin anarchists were mostly forced out of war, and in New York and Paris they published two journals, Believer or Freedom, and Mel Lives Kellogg's Black Flag, come on, you know. And it gets a bit too imaginative when it comes to names. I believe still have a general called Freedom and a general called Black Flag knocking about in England today. It just proves that nothing new is under the sun. And I'll try and speed this up a bit, but okay, what were these Latin anarchists doing in exile? They were conducting what they regarded as a finance campaign. In 1910, they decided to move away from the scattered sort of network of loosely coordinated anarchist affinity groups. And now's the time, we've got to get properly organised. We've got to beef up our activities in Latvia. We've got to beef up the armed resistance in Latvia. We've got to print more anarchist publications. And Jaffas produced the first editions of Kropotkin in Latvia, which he translated from the French, I think. And we've got to smuggle this information to Latvia, along with more arms consignments. We've got to collect more money for the prisoners. These guys were involved in the Anarchist Black Cross. They're the Anarchist Black Cross then. They were involved in it. The anarchists of Hansard and Sydney Street were sending money from expropriations to support families and rebuild comrades in prison. They were sending the anarchists who otherwise had no financial support because they weren't supported by the Social Democrats or the Socialist Revolutions, money for their daily needs. This is part of what these expropriations are used for. For guns, for propaganda, for money to live on, money to operate, for money to beef up the movement towards insurrection and general strike in the Bolshevik. It wasn't propaganda by deed, it was taking money from the people who took it from the workers. And we wouldn't have known anything about Latvian anarchism had it not been for the fact that occasionally they got it wrong. And they hit the headlines. And in particular, four robberies went wrong. In Motherwell in Scotland in April 1908, there was a bank robbery by three Latvian revolutionaries. And two of them were arrested and given 10 and 7 years respectively. And a third man rumoured to be Peter the Painter, subsequently. But certainly not Peter the Painter because he didn't act very professionally. Escaped. In Boston in America in July 1908, there was a similar botched robbery of a saloon in Boston, which was the Roxbury district of Boston, was a Latvian district. Again, the same story, policemen killed, Latvians on the wrong button. Gunshot, one Latvian dead, the other people escaped. And then in January 1909, the Tottenham outrage happened, where two men decided to take the waste delivery for Schnurman's rubber factory and expropriate it for the cause. Unfortunately for them, Schnurman's rubber factory was directly opposite Tottenham police station. Not a very good choice. And a very keystone cops, but bloody chase resulted again with a policeman shot. Unfortunately, a boy got caught by a stray bullet and died, a 10-year-old boy. A horse and various passers-by and policemen got wounded, which resulted in the deaths of the two Latvian anarchists involved. And then in December 1910, you got the Hanslich robbery, the so-called Hanslich murders, because three policemen died. And in January 1911, the siege of Sydney Street, where the deaths were two revolutionaries. It was so dangerous, they had to be confronted with 750 armed police and soldiers. And the original intention was to assassinate these two guys when they left the building. Two furniture vans filled with armed police were waiting for them outside. And it was only because they were waiting for a pre-arranged signal that it was safe to go to another safe house and didn't emerge quite when the police wanted. The police provoked the siege, but the police wanted revenge, a hostage, and they wanted to kill these guys. And their intention originally was to shoot them without warning when they left the building. So I've left a lot of things out, but I've put a lot more interesting things into the narrative that I didn't get in anything with Ian Bone, because he was more interested in some of the quirkier things, like did a bullet really go through Churchill's top hat? And my God, weren't the Latin anarchists smart? Not like the dog on the string guys have got today. They had suits and ties and products. So I hope that this has fleshed out a bit of the story that didn't get into that interview. But basically, what I'm saying is that the activities in Western Europe and America were not propaganda by D. They were a finance campaign, a series of expropriations, which in Britain occurred over a 2.5-year period. And involved many more robberies than the isolated incidents that we know about, which are isolated incidents when they got things wrong, but they got things right more times. I'll leave it there. And,
I'm slightly intrigued why Peter Payne has started talking, referred to him as possibly being Stalin. Because I'm interested in Stalin and everything about him. You know. But I kind of want to move on, because I want to thank you very much for giving us a very good talk in these challenging conditions, you know, the temperature and whatever. But I want to kind of highlight the fact that it sounds to me that things are getting very bad for many across, you know, like I hear that the police now are giving gizmos that can stop the youth on the street, but after you've had fingerprints, just gizmo, and they read off their name and address. And I'm a little bit disappointed that we don't follow the example of as you described tonight, Latvians, and how they will rise up and actually fight back. And I wonder if you've got any thoughts on this subject.
You can't really compare the conditions in Britain today with what existed in Latvia in 1905. The actions of the Latvian workers' movement, and by the way, most of these fighters, or Kalyaneki, literally means fighters, were workers, or the sons of farmers. This armed movement and the armed insurrection in Latvian countryside was directly the result and came out of a strike movement, of a working class movement that was becoming conscious of its own strength. And for the first time, it becoming conscious that it could do something about it and change it. And the degree of violence employed by the revolutionaries was really in direct proportion to the much more greater violence used against it by the Russian state and by the German landowners. And you have to take each situation as it comes, you know. When there's clash struggle that produces a particular form of it, in England in 1984, the workers' movement, which had been content to go on a May Day parade once a year, were forced to become combatant. It wasn't the left, it wasn't the anarchists, it wasn't class war, it wasn't the militant tendency. The ordinary so-called apolitical people, or people who voted Labour, found themselves confronted with an aggressive police force and responded in an appropriate way. So, how they respond depends upon the particular circumstance.
But I would like to draw attention to the fact that, I believe this last weekend, there was a march in London against the deaths in police custody of over 2,000 human beings, yeah? And that got very little press coverage, you know. There are very much deaths, so there's a the hands of a police force.
Yeah, sure.
You know, there's a legend there to protect themselves like that. Yeah, and it's about time that people woke up and said, no, if we don't stop it now, it's only ever going to get worse. Yeah, and we're getting more and more brutalised and more and more fucking murdered.
Well, maybe it'll happen. Maybe with the collapse of Wall Street and the capitalist financial system and the inevitable consequences warning people up, which is maybe these terrible conditions will be created. You know, just, and I say terrible deliberately because there's nothing romantic about revolution. There's nothing romantic about armed struggle and going to prison and being blown up and shot. It's an awful experience to go through, especially if you're the one being blown up or shot and going to prison. But, revolution is an awful thing that sometimes it's necessary.
I agree, it's nice to hear that.
I've got a question there, I'll get a cut. So, Steve.
Cheers. Lovely to hear you. I'm also a company like Roger, a company staff. It's nice to hear about Peter Payton. He's been part of our culture for a long, long time. But it also brings me to my next question, which basically, we all know our revolutionary history, if you like, going back to Wattsheim, President Revolt, etc., the Paris Commune, and also 1905, Bloody Sunday, my father going forwards, possibly a filth spy, marched people in and then ran away again, you know. However, it's the first time I've heard about that in 1905, but it's completely blown your mind in a lot of ways. I understand the difficulty you must have had with the search of Latvian being the mother's home, but the old Russian one, your French being the language of the ruling class or something like that. So I understand the difficulty you must have had with the search. But what? I mean, maybe I'm reading the wrong books. Why is the first one this? Do you feel?
The thing is, there are no books to read. There is no history of Latvian anarchism. Latvian anarchism is an unknown subject in Latvia. When I've been to Latvia, the work I've done has produced a certain amount of publicity in Latvia. There's been articles about Peter the Painter for the first time because of my researches. And people were amazed to find that there were Latvian anarchists because it was eradicated in living memory. First of all, you had the First World War, then you had the Russian Revolution, then a war of independence which resulted in an independent Latvia in 1918. And then occupations by Stalin, Hitler, Stalin again, all of the years of Soviet historical orthodoxy in which anarchists couldn't be mentioned. And there's a huge volume of material, written material about the 1905 revolution, but very, very few mentions of anarchists, and usually not very complimentary. It's because anything that didn't fit the framework of Soviet history either had to be ignored or removed. And so the only way you find out about Latvian anarchism is to go to the Latvian National Archives and comb through the Tsarist police files of the Tsarist secret police, or to go to the Latvian National Library and pull out the back copies, because they still exist, of Breivika and Melnais Karos and Liesma, and look about what the Latvian anarchists were saying at the time, put it together, and put that together with the Soviet histories, and that's what I had to do. And my book would be the first book about Latvian anarchism, because nobody has had the information to write a book. I'm not copying out chunks of somebody's book and somebody else's book and producing a third book. I'm having to dig down and do original research and find the information to write the first book. And maybe somebody then can come along and do a bit more research and find out what I got wrong and what I got right and push the story a bit further. And, you know, so hopefully my book will be the first link in the chain of a much wider research into the subject, because I can only open the lid and point and say, there's information. You know, hopefully other people will start digging too.
Back.
I'm going to ask exactly the same question as Simon. I'm going to ask if there's any feedback anything you would recommend in English about the Latvian working class experiences?
Nothing.
Nothing at all. Because all I know best is in 17, then that was Latvian naval guard or something like that.
Latvian
rifle. Latvian rifle. And a huge fan of his goons point, but other than that, nothing else. You asked me your stuff to get published. You asked about
it. Why were the Latvian riflemen revolutionaries? Because they were the generation whose older brothers had been in the 1905 revolution. At the time of the 1917 revolution, Latvia was a battlefield between the Russian army and the German army. And the Latvian riflemen and the Strelniki had to withdraw from Latvia because it was occupied by the German army. That's why they were in Russia. And yes, while they were in Russia, they were used as the Praetorian Guard of the Bolsheviks and used to attack the Russian anarchists and to attack Magna and everything else. But essentially, they were trying to get home to Latvia. And eventually, after the Russian Civil War finished, most of them did get home to Latvia. But while they were in Russia, they weren't going to side with the Germans who were occupying Latvia. They sided with the Bolsheviks who were fighting against the White Guard. The White Guard were the same people who'd been carrying out punitive expeditions in Latvia between 1905 and 1917.
Yeah, you mentioned the involvement of the Latvians with the Anarchist Black Cross through the expropriations, which then was called the Anarchist Red Cross, I believe.
Yeah.
And the Red Cross was also active in Russia. Was there something within Latvia at that time?
There was a branch in Riga.
Right.
And in fact, the people involved in the Anzvich affair, Fritz Vasa died in Sydney Street, Janusz Jarkus and Peter the Painter. They were the Anarchist Red Cross in London. Not the one that Rudolf Rocker and Kropotkin was involved in. That was the Russian Anarchist Red Cross. This was the Latvian Anarchist Red Cross. They were involved in providing support to prisoners in Latvia, not Russia.
Right. Because later on, the Anarchist Black Cross in Russia fought, obviously, with Macron. I believe formed like defensive units around the towns as opposed to its peasant army. Are you saying that sort of by that period, 1919, in Latvia, there was no existence of anarchism, be it the IRA?
I haven't come across existence, but funny enough, on the train coming from London, I've been reading a book about Macron's intelligence service, a pamphlet produced by Black Cat Press in Canada. And I was amazed to find that there were Latvians involved with the Macronists. And there were Latvians involved with the underground anarchists in Moscow, who actually were funded by the Maccabees, who carried out one attack on the Communist Party headquarters near the Kilbukhari, and were preparing an attempt to blow up the Kremlin and kill the whole Soviet government in 1919. And one of the people arrested was a Latvian anarchist. So Latvia at that period was an independent country. And had what you call a bourgeois democracy. There may have been Latvian anarchist groups there, but I haven't come across evidence yet. But there were certainly Latvian anarchists, some of whom were involved with the 1905 revolution, and at least one member of the Esma group in Latvia, who were in Moscow in 1918 when the Cheka attacked the Moscow anarchists. And in fact, there's something, an article by this Latvian anarchist in Moscow, which I discovered, which has just been published by the Kate Sharp in Library Bulletin. There's probably lots of stuff I haven't found out yet, but, I've only been digging for 20 years, gives a chance.
I've just got a quick question. I wonder what you'd like to comment on this story that we gave a while ago now about the renaming of the flats in East London. You know more about me, but...
Yeah, I think it's farcical. For years and years, there was a block of flats in Sydney Street, more or less on the site of the siege.
called Siege House. That was the name of the little flat, Siege House, and nobody gave a monkeys one way or another. Suddenly, this council, obviously proceeded from loony lefty tree huggers, had the temerity to put up a little blue plaque saying, Peter's House, Painter's House, and the Daily Express and the Daily Mail and the Evening Standard are all up in arms. What's the big deal? Maybe one day we'll have Chapman River House, who cares?
Any more questions? Right. Oh, there's a point of information. In the late 1980s, the Commons Parliament in Trade Council of Bristol got forward of Young Birmingham Minister, brought up a shout for a get together with Riga from Bristol. And that was notifying all Commons members. Mm-hmm. We thought it was a bit strange at the time. I was in my infancy, and it's a very, very strange manipulation of the Trades Council. Kevin were exactly how it went, but that did happen. So it does happen now. That closeness. Mm-hmm. You see me rewrite the top of history.
Right.
Why not? Why not? I'm not speaking.
And just say thanks for coming. And we'll try.